Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Underground, which was a WGN show from 2016 about the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's funny because I didn't feel we spent that much time on the Underground Railroad itself, but following some slaves, you know, going to freedom and dealing with aspects.
Yeah.
Of it.
Because we saw a stop on the Underground Railroad being set up.
Mm-hmm.
We saw people discovering kind of how to become part of the Underground Railroad. It was very much about abolitionists and about how slaves ran away.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I thought it was more about how slaves ran away because the slaves, up until they got a fair ways down, had really no connection. They did it on their own before hooking up with the Underground Railroad.
Well, and I kept telling you that I kind of felt like season one was building towards two of the characters becoming what would be called a conductor mm-hmm. on the Underground Railroad, where they then went back to the South.
Yeah.
Found people and brought them.
Yeah, there were seven slaves that escape
mm-hmm.
early on, and the number whittles down over the 10 episodes of the first season. Both out of those seven and out of the people left back on the plantation.
Yeah, sadly.
It was, frankly, a very dark and somewhat depressing story.
Well, at one point, because we were watching this around Christmas time, at one point we're most of the way through an evening, and you're like, and do you want to switch to a movie or keep watching this? And I'm like, this is so engrossing. I wouldn't call it uplifting, but it's engrossing.
Yes, let's go find some meaningless, trivial, happy, you know, holiday yeah. film sort of a deal, which is what we did for that night.
Yeah, because it's almost a, I'm not sure, depending on the mood you're already in, I'm not sure you really want to end the night watching this.
Well, and this was 10 episodes, and we did it in 2 5-episode chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And these episodes were about 50 minutes long, thereabouts.
Well, and I would just get so caught up in it. Part of it was such a wonderful being almost a warped word to use, but portrayal of the reality.
It was a disturbingly believable one.
Yes. But they pulled from the William and Ellen Craft story and other really famous stories. And I think really the only one they didn't pull from would be Solomon Northrop, who was the one who was a free man in the North.
Mm-hmm.
And under the Fugitive Slave Act, people came and kidnapped him and sold him in the South with basically a, we've decided he must be a runaway slave type attitude.
It's tempting to say that the slavery was just a really bad chapter of American history, but that frankly really undersells it to consider it even a chapter. It was a huge, significant chunk of, you know, the foundational aspects of our country. And fortunately, we've come a long way from there. There's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, slavery is illegal. I think most people acknowledge it was wrong. There's still systemic racism and other things. And I think stories like this, particularly as powerfully done as this was, without preaching.
Yeah.
Well, or it's important to have these things out there. And this was a surprisingly entertaining, although not uplifting, story.
I think it was episode 9 when they finally out and out said, so-and-so is the parent of other characters. And it was something I strongly suspected from the first episode. At one point, I even said, I think this is going to turn out to be the case. Then we get a scene of, well, there is a relationship between that person and the other parent, but it's how new is the relationship.
Yeah.
And as, you know,
they played fair on a lot of that stuff. I didn't think they telegraphed stuff, but it was often kind of clear where things were probably going
to
go.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that to me came out of nowhere, and then as I thought about it, I was like, well, okay, they played fair in the use of language, but gave me no reason to suspect it, was the relationship between Pearlie Mae and, I guess, the wife's name was Suzanne.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, they flat out told us Suzanne and Pearlie Mae have lived their entire life on the plantation.
We're both born on the plantation.
Right, that was the next phrase that was used. And I'm like, looking back on it, because of the way they deliberately were setting up the, these are the things the two of you have in common.
Yeah, there were things that were said, but not flat out stated.
Yeah, they talked around something, and then when Suzanne just flat out stated it, I was like, oh. Yes, I guess they did kind of give me.
I think this was a very well-written show for the most part. There were a couple of things where we'd commented after an episode of, oh, well, wait a sec. Like at one point, the Seven are trying to get out of town. They're going to do it by getting on a train. The problem is a bounty hunter or slave hunter knows they're going to do that. So they wind up somehow magically on the roof of this train station, or train stop.
Uh-huh.
That they're going to go jump onto the train as it's leaving. And I'm like, how did they get up there?
Well, and then there's one adult makes it on top of the train, and he's going to turn around and catch his 8-year-old.
He hadn't made it on the train, but it's like, we got to get on there. You go, I'll throw your kid to you.
Yes.
Now, the guy who goes first at this point has an injured arm, already has one bad eye.
Yeah.
So, think about it. The train's already pulling away from the station. He's got to run, jump on it, stop, turn, and then the other guy's going to throw the kid.
Yeah.
And the guy's going to catch the kid with one arm and...
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And all of this kind of happens almost like, well, almost literally off panel or off screen.
Yeah.
And there's a line of, oh, you did it. You know, I guess the kid made it.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some flashbacks a little later. Prove, yeah, they got on the train, so forth. So there's a few things they had to kind of gloss over. And there's a couple of things here and there that were maybe a little more subtle than they should have been. And a few things where you stop and think about it, it's like, yeah, I don't know if that quite works. But it's so engaging in the moment
mm-hmm.
that I can kind of forgive all of that.
Yeah, in the moment, none of it made me stop and go say, what? It was a couple hours after watching it that I was like, oh, wait a sec.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Well, and I think one of the challenges with a story like this is the setup. Because we started, I guess, on the plantation,
mm-hmm.
cut to a lawyer. Turns out later the lawyer's the younger brother of the guy who's running the plantation. And it's like, okay, that's a little... confusing until it's kind of clear, like, why we're following the two or how it ties together.
Why the two full brothers have different last names.
That too. But then when Noah, one of the slaves, is kind of picking out who he's going to take with him, it's, well, what about this guy? What about this guy? Yeah, no, not going to work or whatever. There were so many new names and faces at that point. It was a little hard to keep track of everything.
I went through the first... 2 or 3 episodes trying to figure out Sam, the carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, I didn't realize Sam was Rosalie's brother.
Yeah.
/ the carpenter. I was disoriented on him because I kept seeing him in different places and contexts and not
putting him together. Well, and I thought he had been ruled out.
So did I.
Yeah. There were a couple of things where it was a little confusing and the plan was kind of fluid at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them a good couple of episodes before they started to run because we had to set all of this up. And I think it was time well spent.
Yes.
I think overall they paced the 10 episodes of the season well.
Well, and going back to the pulling on reality to make something so believable, they had the song about the drinking gourd, which is real and about following the Big Dipper to the North Star. Mm-hmm. And because Noah had not tried to run once, but had been trying to scout and get information, but had ended up being caught by the people who chased runaway slaves and had been thrown in a jail cell, he had gotten this impossible to believe how he got it, song lyrics.
Well, it had been carved into the wooden wall of the cell, and he basically used the blood of somebody else and some cloth or whatever to do like a rubbing of it, and somehow got it. I don't know quite how that worked, but it did.
Yes.
And it was still legible afterwards.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, that's kind of doesn't make sense, but we got to capture it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact of, okay, we've got this written thing. Anyone know how to read?
And anybody know how to understand the what's the drinking gourd? What's the blue haze? What's the wolf? They never really told us what the wolf is, but my best guess is that was the Indian tribe.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I was expecting one of the Indians to, you know, either give that as the name of the camp, the tribe, or mm-hmm. one of them or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple of things that were a little vague here and there, but the production values, I thought, were outstanding. The plantation and all of that. I don't know where they shot this, but it was really well done and mm-hmm. believable that we were there in the time.
Well, and they captured the hardship of the cotton fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, particularly when the kid had to work that day.
Well, and expecting the 8-year-old, he worked 2 days, expecting 8-year-old James to pull roughly the same amount of cotton as adults.
Yeah, yeah. The only part that bothered me with that is the guy running the farm, the slaves at that point, I thought had died.
Well, we'd seen Ernestine try to stitch him up.
Yeah, I guess we hadn't seen his recovery and him getting back to work.
Exactly.
And it was unclear at times how much time had elapsed.
Yes.
It was...
We would guess stray comment of, we've been doing this for weeks and we're hungry type thing.
We haven't eaten for weeks, which I thought was a little overselling it. It's like, I get you've got to have made it, you know, that far or whatever, but surely you've had something to eat. You couldn't still be moving if you hadn't.
Yeah.
The cast on this...
Phenomenal.
...was, outstanding. For me, one of the ones that was part of why I was interested in watching it was Aldous Hodge from Leverage.
Mm-hmm.
He's also been on, what's the other, City on a Hill? Or no.
I think that is the title of it. It's like a Showtime show?
I think so.
Yeah.
He's done that. But of course, I mainly know him from Leverage and stuff. And man, he's doing a fantastic job here.
Well, and in terms of knowing what they had when they were making it, it's clear to me because, like, when they needed someone to do 3 scenes and play the hospitalized wife of one of the runaway slave catchers, they got country music star Jennifer Nettles.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically, this woman is so lost in a manic depressive haze that the only way she's communicating is through song.
Well, and she's been lobotomized.
Well, there is that, too.
It was a stark reminder of, at this point in time, medicine kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Who else did we have? We had Reed Diamond.
Yes.
Who's been on things like a little bit of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was in Dollhouse. He was on Franklin Abash.
Yes.
He's done a number of things, and I thought he did a terrific job as the brother running the plantation. Mark Blucas, who was on, I think, some of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, was the younger brother. I think he did a really good job. The actress who played the younger brother's wife, I forget her name off the top of my head, but she was Huntress on Arrow in like first or second season or something. She did a terrific job.
She really did. And part of that is that when we first encountered her, she was going through kind of not quite a postpartum depression, but something along those lines. And she was lost in grief. And as her husband gave her purpose and pulled her out of it with this joining the Underground Railroad, which she was scared about the danger to them, to mm-hmm. the household, etc. But as he pulled her out of it, her intelligence really shined through.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she seems to be absentmindedly staring out the window and they say, we have to do something. And she says, you can't. And then she starts explaining, if you look in the reflection of the window across the street, you'll see this. That man's walked by three times. And it wasn't she was absentmindedly looking out the window. She was monitoring their surroundings.
Well, she appeared both absentminded and actively not wanting to be there.
Yeah.
It's like, should we really be doing this?
She was very conflicted, and yet, when she understood someone's life was at stake,
yeah,
she stepped up.
Yeah, I thought it portrayed the time. Now, I say this not having lived through the time, obviously, so I could be totally wrong, but I thought it portrayed the time believably.
Yeah.
And such a cross-section of it. Slave owners, those that are actively against owning of slavery, of slaves and stuff, a slave hunter, various slaves that are just kind of go with the flow or, no, we got to get out or, you know, just a huge cross section.
Well, and the Fugitive Slave Act, which seemed to give these people who gave lip service to not believing in the ownership of slaves the right to capture slaves and send them back because that was a way to give them money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this interesting dynamic that was well played.
Well, in the introduction of the main slave hunter that we follow through the season, at the beginning, looks like he's a sympathizer in helping somebody escape.
Yeah.
And he basically apparently like walks her right in to say, yep, I'm turning her in.
Yeah, that was Pullman, played by Christopher Maloney from Law & Order SVU.
Yeah, they did not pull anything on in terms of their casting and stuff.
Yeah.
One of the slaves, Moses, we knew that actor from Justified.
Mm-hmm.
He played one of the guys up in the hills or whatever.
Yeah.
I forget what the character's name, but did a terrific job there and did an excellent job here. And I really got to give him credit in terms of casting and directing and plus the actors themselves. The child actors.
Yes. They were fabulous.
The one who played the slave hunter's son, mm-hmm. Ben, did a really good job throughout. The one who played Rosalie's younger brother. Whatever,
James
did a terrific job.
Yeah.
And really had a chance to shine in that one where he's out in the field.
Yeah.
Because the first day doesn't go so well. He overhears because the brother gets the lashes and stuff. And you see just a complete turnaround the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And just some great moments with that.
Well, and the one who played Boo, when she at one point comes out into the hallway carrying a gun.
Yeah.
And it's okay. This child doesn't seem to be playing with the gun, but seems to have something on her mind. And when she fires the gun with the bad man was coming at you, pointing at Elizabeth's husband, because she had seen the marshal hurt Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And hadn't done anything at the time.
Well, when Boo was, I don't want to say first introduced, when she was part of the escape group, she just seemed to be up, well, they've got a kid, so, you know, okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Boo and Moses kind of, they're off on the train, okay. But then when we get, you know, an episode that really focuses on her,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that actress did a terrific job.
Yeah.
And I credit, you know, obviously the actors and actresses all involved, but I think there's a lot of skill involved casting the right people to the right roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the direction as well as the writing and also just the sets, the costuming, everything that sells the performance.
Yeah.
It all, you know, builds on each other. And if any one of those had kind of been, you know, that's not so good, it would have shown some weaknesses in some of the others. But it was one of those things that you really, I at least got sucked into the time frame, the plight
mm-hmm.
of the characters and such. And it was, you know, it was entertaining is not the right word. Engaging, I think, is the right word.
That's why I keep saying engrossing.
Yeah, it well, engrossing is probably a good word, because some of it was literally gross. And the whole situation of slavery and all of that is just, you know, mind-bogglingly disgusting and whatnot, yet it is a historical fact.
Yeah.
And I believe you had told me that this goes for a second season but didn't get a third, because at the time WGN was looking to get bought out, and the people they were going to get bought out by didn't want that kind of subject matter.
Yeah, which now, is sad.
I'm not sure if they didn't want it because it was just politically charged, they didn't want that, or what particular aspect of it they didn't want.
Yeah.
But this is on par with some of the stuff that I would have expected out of, you know, HBO or Netflix or something like that.
Definitely.
And the fact it was done by WGN, the superstation out of Chicago, it's like they do original programming. They mm-hmm. did original programming. And they did a really good job on it.
They did, yeah.
And, I mean, just finding a place to shoot this and not show any signs of modern technology and stuff like that had to be a little bit of a challenge. Yet, you know, throughout, I felt they really sold the time frame, the location.
The environment. Terms of the slave quarters versus the big house.
Well, and when the younger brother's house's nursery gets kind of renovated to have somewhere beneath it to hide the slaves and such, the way they filmed that,
yeah,
where it was kind of, you know, let's rotate around and kind of cut between, okay, they're starting to dig it out, and now we go a little further, and okay, now he's, you know, not just digging out, he's like, you know, in the hole.
Yeah.
You know? Some time has elapsed. That one was one of those where I think it was a little too subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, I don't know how much time has elapsed, but clearly some time has elapsed.
Yeah.
Now, the other one that kind of undercut that was later when it's a, yeah, and we dug another one overnight.
Well, it was more than one night, and they dug the tunnel, not the full room.
Ah. I thought they dug the full thing to where they could maybe not refurnish the inside or whatever, but
they said they dug a tunnel into
okay.
the other character's house.
Yeah. It was really disturbing in places of just the subject matter and stuff like that. But this is one of those things that I really hope we're not doomed to repeat this sort of history if we forget it, but there is that possibility.
Well, it was full of reminders that moments can bring out the best or the worst in you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Pullman's son, Ben, discovers, well, he doesn't fully recognize, etc., his dad can't read. So his dad doesn't actually know what the letters from the bank say. He's trusting someone else with the
mm-hmm.
to tell him the contents. But when he reads the letter for himself from the bank, which mysteriously isn't stuck in a book someone else gave to him, but we'll skip past that, and discovers he's been lied to by his dad.
Yeah.
Or his dad didn't know the truth to tell him. You know, this is a moment to act on your best angel, and he does.
Yeah, there was always the looming question of, is this kid gonna go down the wrong path because of what his father does for a living of hunting slaves and stuff, or not? And he's had some good influences in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to have at that point, you know, that was a make or break. He could have, you know, decided, well, you know, go down the wrong path. He doesn't. He goes the right path and pays a pretty hefty price for it.
Yeah.
Through no fault of his own or the person who inflicts that.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of times where bad things happened to keep the story moving along. But I don't know that I felt there was any point in which a character acted counter to their motivation and beliefs and made a bad decision for good television.
Mm.
There were a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah.
But they were believably so.
Well, at one point, Noah gets put in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. He wants to help Cato.
Mm-hmm.
He may not like Cato, but he doesn't want to leave him behind. But he recognizes, if I stay and help him, we'll both go down.
Yeah.
And he is so visibly torn by this. Whereas Cato's just looking at him like, I always knew you'd abandon me if it saved you.
I had taken that exchange of looks to be, I told you that your sentimentality would get you killed.
And there is definitely some of that too. Yeah.
You know, this is, we're not both coming out of this.
Yeah.
So I thought the actors played well off each other, and a lot was in the subtext there. And part of it because they had certain conversations before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to go rush in to go save Rosalie and you're going to get killed in the process. Make sure it's worth it or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think with Cato, we'd seen some back and forths on him in terms of, it's looking like he's going to turn in the escapees before they've escaped.
Yeah.
He doesn't. And then he turns on one or two of them, you know.
Well,
he always acted in his own best self-interest for the most part. He was soft on Rosalie, which is why he helped Noah rescue her.
But he seemed to become soft on Rosalie when they were at the doctor's house. The only reason he helped her going to the doctor's house was because she knew where the next stop on the railroad was.
Well, and when he rescued her, same deal. So yeah, you could argue his motivations a couple of different ways, and I don't think it's crystal clear. I think it leans on self-interest.
But at the doctor's house, he seemed to actually see her as a person. The piano playing, he became kind of charmed by, this is a person.
Well, he didn't know she could do that. And he was seeing, I think, her in the light of the potential of what they could be.
Yeah.
If the world had treated them differently.
Yeah.
There were a number of times where it's like, okay, they're posing as non-slaves. Are they going to get found out or not?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple of times where it's like, okay, what we're seeing, we later get told a little more happened or whatever, but I thought played fair.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly what had happened in the marshal's office there at the end.
Yes.
There was a couple of things. It's like, okay, when we cut to this is what happened, it's like, yeah, I thought something was going on.
Yeah.
So again, I think the writing was really well done. I think with anything, there's always room for improvement. But I don't think there was anything in this that really needed improvement.
No, it was well thought out and well put together.
Yeah. There was a definitely a death toll to be had on it, though.
Yeah.
With the characters. Because at the end, when Rosalie's kind of, it's like, well, tell your story so we can record it so others can learn from it, sort of a deal. And she's like, well, there's this and this. And she's just giving. It's like, oh, yeah, that character died, that character died, that character died, that character. It's like, damn.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even all of them.
Well, one of the things I really loved was when the slave catcher confronts somebody and says, and did you know one of the slaves is the child of?
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this great reaction moment of, no.
Yeah, there's a couple of why do you do what you do, and then realizing that beyond just the principled aspect.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I think, a very moving story in that regard without being preachy, but there's an aspect of you can't tell this sort of a tale without an inherent anti-slavery bias.
But they worked it all in without feeling like the equivalent of Bible thumping.
Well, it's funny because I think they got the soapbox literally out of the way at the beginning.
Yes, which was funny.
Because the younger brother, when we first see him, is dragging a podium and is literally, I think, standing on a soapbox to give his speech to, you know, an empty town square kind of deal.
Yeah.
And giving the morality of the position.
Yeah. Talking about the Dred Scott case.
Yeah. And it introduced one or two other characters that were key through the story. And I feel they did a good job in those sorts of cases, reminding us, okay, here's who the character is, where they live. Because this story takes place across multiple states and locations.
Yeah.
And at times it does get a little hard to keep track. I think it would have been out of place for this narrative, but it almost would have been nice to have had, you know, like how in Indiana Jones, you've got the map with the arrows kind of deal.
I was never positive where the younger brother was. I mean, we're somewhere north of the middle of Kentucky, and we're on the Ohio River. And I believe we are, well, we're not in Philadelphia. I think we're south of Philadelphia. But that's as close as I got.
Yeah, that's about as close as I got, too. I could never really place. It's like, okay, where's the plantation? Where's the brother? They're going up to Philly. Is that on, beyond, you know?
Well, the plantation's in Georgia, not terribly far from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Macon County in Georgia.
Mm.
So I thought, you know, I ought to just look that up. I bet that's where they theoretically put.
Yeah, yeah. I felt they wrapped up everything in the first season that kind of, for the most part, needed to be wrapped up. I say for the most part, I think Noah didn't end where we thought he was going to end.
No.
And I think Noah and Rosalie are the two characters that are going to be continuing it next season.
Mm-hmm.
Rosalie's mom, I don't know.
I was intrigued by where she ended up. I really feel they didn't, a scene or two before that, they didn't really clarify who helped Steen. Looked to be the guy who had come with the preacher.
I thought it was, yeah. The preacher's...
Yeah, and they didn't clarify why. Also hadn't clarified why in an episode or two before he was the one she had confided to.
Yeah, that whole relationship, that I do think something was left on the editing room floor.
Yeah, so that disappointed me. I suspect Rosalie will at some point try and track down her mother.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect Rosalie to try and go for James.
Yeah, I think so.
And then hopefully Rosalie and Noah will try and be reunited.
I'd like to see Rosalie and Noah get reunited. Definitely, I think they've got to. She's got to go back for James. I don't know that we need to see the younger brother and his wife again, but I kind of think we should.
Mm-hmm.
The only other character I'm thinking we really have to see next season, and it was one introduced like in the last episode, was the female.
Harriet Tubman.
No.
No. Oh, Patty.
Patty.
Yeah, which is another well-known actress. She did Army Wives.
Mm.
Bridget Brenner. And one that we didn't mention, the Marshal, who at one point between episodes, I comment, I don't see a path of redemption for that character.
Nope. Nope. And I don't see one for second season either.
No. But he was played by James Lafferty from One Tree Hill.
Mm. Yeah, they had a fair number of recognizable people,
mm-hmm.
and I felt all of them gave really good performances.
Yeah.
And in most cases, probably some of the best work I think they've done.
I would agree. And I mean, part of it is the material gave them so much to work with, and they really rocked it.
Yeah. There was some definite depth to be had there, and it wasn't overly melodramatic, and it wasn't, you know, trying to be overly depressing.
Yeah.
And there were some good moments, I think, for all of them. There were some good action sequences, some good chase drama and whatnot, and some good, you know, character moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it was, I can see what would have attracted somebody to the project.
Definitely.
I can also see what would have scared some people off from the project.
Yes.
You know, so they told the first kind of book, if you will, yet still every episode had a beginning, middle, and end and felt satisfying in and of itself.
Definitely.
And I'm curious where that next season goes in terms of, okay, Rosalie's made it to freedom. She's now going back to help others do it.
Mm-hmm.
Does she cross paths with Noah? Does she not? And how many familiar faces do we see?
Yeah.
And obviously there's a couple, because there's a high death toll in the season that we're not going to see again, because they dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see a few others that we could see again. And in some cases, just that person seeing another person kind of, ooh, that's bad kind of deal.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I'm interested in that second season. I think we'll definitely watch it. Don't know that we're going to jump right to it. May need a little bit of a breather to, you know, to watch something a little more uplifting between seasons. But it's a shame this did not get more than, you know, two seasons.
I agree.
And it's something that somebody else probably could have or should have picked up.
I agree with that, too. Yeah. because the material is fantastic.
Well, and let's face it, a lot of people don't really learn enough about American history.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do, reading it out of a textbook is one thing. Seeing a dramatization of it, I think, makes some of it, you know, the ideas hit home a little more.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I don't know how you could watch a story like this and not feel, you know, empathy and the feeling that, you know, these sorts of things need to be in our history,
mm-hmm.
and not in any way, shape, or form in our current day.
Yeah.
And again, I feel, you know, as a country, we've come a long way since then. But you watch a story, you think about things like this, and you realize just how far we had to go.
Yeah.
And how much further we still need to go.
Yeah.
So it's something that I'm sure this has got to be streaming somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But well worth checking out if you're into, you know, historical fiction.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Since recording this episode, we've learned that Underground has been picked up by the Oprah Winfrey Network, so that's where you can find it. It's 2 seasons, 10 episodes apiece. It's well worth watching.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.